This is a previously recorded episode of The Undercard, Hand Combat Radio. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Coming to you from the Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming, it's The Undercard, bringing you the best in hand combat coverage with feature interviews, major events, and the hottest ring girls from around the nation. The Undercard is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. And now, here they are, always in your corner, Brad, Marv, and Jimmy.
Welcome to The Undercard. It's officially episode 176. We got a packed studio, a packed show. We're not going to waste too much time in going through an intro here because we got a lot going on. The show starts off with Gail Falkenthal, that if you followed us over from the other network, she's one of our boxing experts we call in. It's a lady that knows her stuff. We're going to start off with her, and then we got an amazing guest in studio. We got Frank Garza, a guy that if I don't understand the rule, I reach out to. Ref, judge, and we got Sugar Hill sitting in. We got Anthony Barnes sitting in. At the 8 o'clock hour, we got Muhammad Adam, who is fighting this Saturday in Royal Oak again. If you've seen him in Detroit, he brings a lot of people. It's wild, it's crazy, and we're going to talk to him a little bit. And then we also have a pre-recorded interview with Nathan Bedwell. He's the gentleman that fought James Ballard this past week. We're going to also break down the Detroit Brawl. We just got a lot going on. And we are saying goodbye to the Wild West in Michigan because officially tonight is the last night you could have unsanctioned AMI MMA.
Yep.
Tomorrow starts a new day in which there's regulation. We're going to talk a lot about that. We even dressed up in Western attire to celebrate.
Yep.
Sugar wore a real badge over there where we all have fake deputy badge. There you go. So we're going to have a lot of fun. So we're going to start off by calling Gail Falkenthal right here and get going on the show.
You can talk for a second.
Okay, yeah. We'll still talk.
I was doing something.
And then Anthony Barnes is here, and we're still waiting on Marv, so he can definitely tease.
I thought you already typed it
no.
in.
He can definitely tease
bad.
Marv.
I know.
I missed the three last episodes, and now Marv doesn't come.
Well, you know.
You're like
a pitcher
in rotation. You only hit, start every four.
See, you actually have an
not
excuse
bullpen.
When you're not here, Anthony. You're training. Marv just doesn't come because he's lazy.
That's true. Or it's in his contract.
Or it's in his contract. That's
one of the two. Goddamn words you're saying.
There he is. All right, we're calling up Gail here really quick.
God.
Meat sticks and all.
You look like a gay hillbilly.
I think it looks nice. You look good.
Nice.
Hello, Gail Falkenthal.
Hi, Gail. This is Brad. You're live on the air with The Undercard from PodcastDetroit.com.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Gail.
It's been a year since we've talked to you. How is this possible?
No.
It has been a year. It has been
Damn.
A year. I know. We have quite the studio audience, so if you want to ask some questions to them, you can. In our studio with us, we have Frank Garza, who I know you're well aware of, a famous boxing referee. We also have Sugar Hill, Trainer of the Year, 2 years ago, Adonis Stevenson's trainer. He's sitting with us. And we got Anthony Barnes, boxing prospect. He's on his way up, undefeated, 7-0, signed with Top Rank. So if you have any questions for them, you can fire back this way.
Fantastic. What are you talking to me for? That's quite a lineup.
Because you know your stuff. You know your stuff. And they might interject and give you a question or two. But let's start off with really quickly, since we've last talked to you, it was a Klitschko heavyweight division, and then nothing else was going on. Since then, we now have four different champions in the heavyweight division. Tell us what you think about this and who's going to rise.
Well, who would have predicted that? Boy, amazing how much money you could have won on some of those bets, right? Some of those long shots. You know, and as crazy as we all think Tyson Fury is it crazy or is it crazy like a fox? You know, he found the code. He solved the puzzle. Now, I'll be really impressed once I see the rematch and see how he does. Because we don't really know whether this was a one-time fluke and whether it was really more about Vladimir Klitschko losing the fight versus Tyson Fury winning the fight. There's a difference. Outcome is the same. But I think we're going to find out it might have been a little more Klitschko stepping off the gas and then getting perplexed by this crazy thing coming at him with a game plan nobody would have expected.
We got some shaking heads
and
here in the studio for that.
I think we're going to see something very different. But what's happened in the heavyweight division to reinvigorate it is very exciting. And I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah, and Deontay Wilder, there's a lot of haters out there for Deontay Wilder, which is surprising because the reason he got into boxing seems like a legit reason. Everyone knows the story about his daughter. Typically, you know, he's a little bit brash at sometimes, maybe coming in with the way he comes into the ring and stuff. Well, we've seen this before with boxing. It's amazing that we have an American heavyweight now, maybe untested, maybe he caught Stavern when he wasn't 100%. But here's somebody that America's been rallying or saying, hey, we want this. And here he is, and it doesn't seem like people are embracing it.
Yeah, and it's a little surprising to me. You know, Deontay's learning on the job, and he is learning. Learning is occurring. That's what I look for when I see a guy in the ring. Is he a little better at something, anything, than he was the last time I saw him? Progress is really important every single time you go out. Even for the veterans, that's still important. There's always something to learn. We all know that. We've all got to be lifelong learners. So we need to keep that in mind when we're looking at Deontay. I am really surprised people haven't embraced him. You know, I think people sometimes forget that the model, especially in North America, and I'm going to count Mexico, Canada, Central America, our guys cannot afford, literally cannot afford to have the long, subsidized amateur careers that guys in Eastern Europe and other parts of the world can. Somebody like a Vasily Lomachenko or Gennady Golovkin, you know, they're not going to be a millionaire, but they're going to live just fine fighting amateur fights. They can get in all of those rounds. Deontay couldn't afford to do that, you know, forget about his daughter. Forget about that. Forget about some of the great Mexican fighters. You know, a lot of them cannot afford, literally, to pay the bills and stay in the amateur ranks. They've got to get out and earn a paycheck. Boxing is a business, after all. So that's really important. Everyone needs to bear that in mind. He's doing just fine. Everyone needs to calm down.
Well, I'm gonna test your insiders here. What's going on with PBC? So they've been around a year, but now all these reports that they're financially hurting bad. Everybody that's invested with Al Haymon, there's starting to be reports that they might be in the $400 million debt range. What are you hearing out there, and will PBC even be around in a month?
Well, I'm hearing the same thing, too. Listen, everybody needs to understand, when you start a new business, one of the things you've got to have on hand is a lot of capital and cash on hand, because you aren't necessarily going to turn a profit in the first couple of years. And so if you've got the capital in the bank and you're willing to spend it without seeing a profit come out of it to lay the foundation, you know, it's going to allow you to survive. Most business startups don't survive. So to increase the odds for yourself, you've got to spend money, and you're not going to show a black bottom line. At first, PBC isn't exactly this position. All of this at this point is an investment. And we have to understand their business model is very different than a lot of the promoter and network, especially premium network partnerships out there, where they're each bearing some of the cost. And, you know, the HBO and Showtime model is not based on commercial time sales of, you know, Budweiser commercials and all of that stuff. Where PBC is operating, they are. But what they've done is something that's been done in broadcasting for decades. They're buying what's called brokered time. They're doing the same thing as when you see, you know, the Tony Robbins infomercial, literally. They're buying that whole hour, that whole 2 hours, whatever their time slot is on the network. They're literally buying that as if they were buying a whole commercial. And then they're responsible for the programming. They earn the sponsorships. They usually, the person buying gets some kind of network deal selling commercials. That's a lot of money up front. They apparently have decided that the model is to spend money to eventually corner the market and make money. So the real question which we need to ask is not what are they losing this first year, but what do their capital reserves tell them about whether their ratings are increasing, whether their viewership's increasing, whether their commercial sales revenue is increasing enough to the point that they'll still have the money to keep doing this until they get into the black.
Well, then
we don't know. We don't know.
Well, let me ask you.
Publicly traded company. They don't have to report squat to us.
Well, let me ask you a question behind this, because Al Heyman obviously burnt a lot of bridges with this PBC thing, and there was court filings, there was everything. What's it mean to a fighter that signed under Al Heyman if this does not work out?
If it doesn't work out and he's got a product that's worth something elsewhere, he goes elsewhere. Not a problem. One thing Al has done is broaden the playing field for a lot of these guys who are getting exposure when they appear on Toe to Toe Tuesday or on Spike on Friday nights. You know, before, you know, they were getting ESPN's Friday Night Fights exposure. They might get a little NBC Sports Network exposure, a little bit of Fox Sports exposure, but nothing in the way that they've had before. So the guys that are popular, doing well, made a name for themselves, you know, you take your business, you take your product elsewhere. Some of the others that are, you know, toward the lower rungs, you're going to have a little tougher time scrapping it out. But let's talk about what they had before this. A lot of them had nothing. So I think we've got a lot of people very agitated for the wrong reasons. And it's a little early to get too hot and bothered about this. To me, I'm still in wait-and-see mode. Yeah, he's got a lot of money he can burn through for his own entertainment. And if he wants to do that, God bless him, let him do it.
I'm going to do one more question, and if you have any questions for Sugar, Anthony or Frank Garza, they're in here, we'll let you fire away because I respect you as a journalist. Really quickly, Canelo versus Khan. I am calling this the ultimate sleight of hand this year because if you know anything about boxing, Khan moving up to 155, this I mean, they're going to sell it somehow, but really – Canelo, everything's Canelo's. He's running downhill on this fight. What do you think of this fight?
You know, it took me a while to settle in on this fight. I looked at it some more and thought about it some more. I don't dislike it. I don't dislike it terribly. We're all talking about it. Hey, number one, we're all talking about it. So that's a positive in there. They get a mark in the pro column. I think they will sell seats. I think Khan's army will come over from Britain for a good time party in May in Las Vegas, Cinco de Mayo. That's another plus in the column. I think we'd all be fools not to think that Canelo thinks this is an easy fight for him. It might not be. You know, it is going to be a speed versus a power puncher fight. And I think people aren't realizing that, you know, Khan, despite what the stats say and despite what BoxRec says, you know, he's every bit as tall and then some as Canelo. We'll see how much weight he puts on and whether that slows him down, to me, is the real question. And if they can work around that, you know, we may see a fairly entertaining fight, you know, no matter the outcome. He gets a big fat paycheck and all is good with the world.
And really, really quickly, behind Canelo and Khan, they are going to be at the T-Mobile Arena. That is the arena everyone thought Mayweather was going to open for a boxing event. It appears he may be done. He hinted at 50, but Golden Boy moves in, snatches the date. It looked like the T-Mobile Arena and MGM Grand was not going to wait any longer for Floyd Mayweather to make this decision. That people know that he's still weighing on there. People say he's for sure retired. Some people said, you know, he's in the gym looking like he's not retired. But Golden Boy comes in and snatches it, and there's always been that rivalry.
There is. I think he'll be in the front row. I have no doubt. You know, he showed up at Staples Center here a couple of weeks ago to watch the first PBC card of the year. He kind of sauntered on in right before the main event. And up to that point, you know, there were a lot of faces in the crowd, and there were a handful of famous L.A. faces. Eddie Murphy was there. Cuba Gooding Jr. was there. Other folks, but I'll tell you what, all buzz turned to Floyd when he walked in. He still commands a lot of attention. He knows that. I think he's going to be there. He's going to wait and see. And I do not think the final chapter in Floyd's career has been written just yet. And if he's staying in shape and he's still considering his options, I don't think any doors have slammed tight shut yet.
Well, I'll let you, if you have any questions for World Trainer Sugar Hill, if you have questions for Anthony Barnes or Frank Garza, feel free to ask, because like I said, I respect you as a journalist, and we're glad to have you on tonight.
Well, gentlemen, I am going to throw out a couple of the fights we just talked about. So let's talk about the Klitschko-Fury rematch. What does Tyson Fury have to do to make sure he gets another in the win column? What does Vladimir have to do to make sure that doesn't happen and leave the end of his career in tatters?
Everyone's looking at me, so I guess I'll answer it.
Who's the boxing trainer in the room?
Yeah. I'll answer this question from my opinion. So, you know, Tyson Fury, I thought he did a very good job, fighting Vladimir and his game plan. And I just thought he may have been a little underestimated as far as his athleticism and his abilities, you know, because of his big mouth. And but that's the way Tyson Fury is. He's always been that way. And, you know, it was something that worked for him. I think the rematch with Vladimir, Tyson Fury would have to do the same thing. He would just have to step his game up a little bit more just to be ready, to be more ready for Vladimir to defend his championships. And Vladimir Klitschko, he's going to have to do a lot more. He can't just sit back and wait for Tyson Fury to feint and make all the moves and control the fight, which he did in the first fight. Vladimir is going to have to take control. He's going to have to do a lot of moving, exert a lot of energy, and he's going to have to put a lot more pressure on Tyson Fury.
Is that what you'd work with Vladimir in the gym? Would it be movement?
Yes, I would work with movement a lot. Tyson Fury can move as well as Vladimir, and that's something that I don't think Vladimir is accustomed to in such a tall guy like a Tyson Fury. And I think that made a big difference in the fight.
What do you think about some of the other talents in the heavyweight division? And, of course, we've mentioned Deontay Wilder. You know, a lot of the buzz has swirled around Cuban Luis Ortiz, who signed on to fight Tony Thompson. And it's going to be an interesting matchup to keep him busy. Who else do you see out there? The others are across the pond when we're talking about someone like Joseph Parker or Anthony Joshua. Who do you like of that next sort of up-and-coming level?
Speaking of Deontay Wilder, I do like Deontay Wilder. You mentioned earlier that he's learning on the job, and he is learning on the job. I think he's doing a very well job working with a former 1984 Olympic gold medalist, Mark Breland. And, you know, those two, they click together and they work well together. Mark Breland was more of a boxer who had a great technique, and he's, passing that on to Deontay Wilder, and he's learning. He still makes mistakes, but everyone does. So he's getting the right fights to get him the experience to move him on to be one of those top heavyweights. And I see him going far in the heavyweight division as being champion already. You know, people think that they're going to beat him because of maybe his lack of experience and he hasn't been tested, but I've known him since he was an amateur, and he's been in training camps with Vladimir as well. And, you know, he's had a lot of experience, and it was rough experience. He started off winning the National Golden Gloves with very little experience, and he won that, went to the Olympics. So everything that's been put before him as a challenge or an obstacle, he's overcome it. And I see him still, climbing up in the heavyweight rankings, I guess, you know, as far as being a top heavyweight, not just world champion, but I see him climbing and growing still. As far as other heavyweights in the division, I do like Anthony from Great Britain. I do like him as a heavyweight a lot, and I took notice of him some years ago from Emmanuel. Emmanuel liked him. And that's when I first put my eye on him and saw why he liked him. Anthony is one of those fighters. He's actually still learning. You know, he's growing. He's a big guy. He's a big heavyweight that's coordinated. And that means a lot in the heavyweight division, because the heavyweight division has changed to mostly big guys. The heavyweight division was a smaller, a smaller-sized heavyweight division. The heavyweights now are more like a super heavyweight division. These guys are like 6'6". you know, 250 pounds, and they can move just the same as the basketball players such as LeBron James and these football players that are offensive linemen weighing 300 pounds, maybe running a 40-yard dash in about 5 seconds, you know. So everything has changed now, and, you know, and that includes the heavyweight division. So I see some exciting years in the heavyweight division coming up. You know, we have an American champion, and I think it makes it a lot more interesting for the heavyweight division now that all the belts are kind of spread out. Not to say I didn't enjoy the belt staying in one place, because that was something that was built by Emmanuel, with Vladimir having all those belts and trying to be undisputed. But now we're moving on to something different and more exciting.
It is exciting. You know, interesting that you would mention how big some of these heavyweights have gotten. You know, when you see a fight between two guys like Amir Mansour and Dominic Brazil, you know, they've got 35 pounds between them. Do you think it's time to split that division and have a lower half and an upper half? The weight spreads are huge.
It's been talked about, but it's always been that if you're a heavyweight, you're a heavyweight. You know, one punch can end the fight. And, you know, I think I have mixed emotions on that, but thinking about it now, you know, they should just leave it alone. You know, you fight heavyweight, not saying that a smaller guy couldn't take out the big guys, because Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield were not the biggest guys, and they took out the big guys as well. It just takes a combination of power and footwork and determination with any superstar to do that.
Frank, I'm going to turn to you and ask my very favorite question I love to ask veteran referees. What's your favorite fight you ever ref? All-time favorite. Could be an obscure one, could be a famous one. I always love to know.
You know, I've done a lot of them, and I got to tell you, probably my favorite was going back to my hometown back in Ohio and doing a small club show because I had all my family there. My mom came. The local newspapers came out and did a front page spread, you know. So that was one of my all-time favorites. But another one was doing Edgar Sosa in Mexico City at the arena, the Boxeo. Was a lifelong dream to go down to Mexico City, being Mexican-American, and going down there and sitting ringside with all the great Mexican champs. And the arena was made exclusively only for boxing and wrestling. So the front row seats come all the way up to ringside, and the place was packed. And the atmosphere and everything else was unbelievable. You know, those are two fights that come to mind. Kelly Pavlik and Marco Antonio Rubio in Youngstown, Ohio. It was so electric there that night and so loud that the crowd was screaming and yelling for Pavlik, that my ears actually hurt so bad that there was times I'm serious. They were really yelling for Pavlik that people at ringside, we had to put our fingers in our ears.
I think it's marvelous that we have seen some of these fighters, Deontay, Terrence Crawford, to take the fights out of Las Vegas and Los Angeles and New York into the rest of the country. And it's just such a positive for boxing to see arenas in Omaha and Cincinnati and Birmingham filled. And I'd like to see more of that. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, I'd like to add on to that. I did Deontay Wilder in Cincinnati, Ohio, and that was a good fight. And I did Canelo down in, I think, Campeche, Mexico, way down there in the border, the southern part of Mexico, at a palenca, a ring where they use the cockfighting. And people in the hot sun, mothers and fathers with their children, were standing in line at 4 o'clock trying to get into the arena, which wasn't going to open until 7 o'clock. So I agree with you. Seeing these big fights come to these little obscure places are the best, and love to see more of it.
Well, we certainly feel that way in San Diego, and once in a while someone sneaks me across the border, as long as they can get me back in the country, with Tijuana being just 30 miles from where I'm sitting, and there really are no fight fans like Mexican fight fans. It's fun to be among them.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Gail. Where can everybody – do you still do the chat rooms during fights?
I do some, but mainly you'll find my materials on Communities Digital News. which is a native news online site out of Washington, D.C. I'm based in Southern California. And it's Comm, C-O-M-M, Digi, D-I-G-I, News, Comm Digi News. I frequently appear as guests on various video chats and YouTube channels as I get these invitations, like I do to the undercard, although a year. Come on, now.
Well, we were on a hiatus for 6 months, so we're back, though.
More often.
Yeah.
Have a great evening. I'm going to be enjoying listening to the rest of the show as a fan.
All right. Thank you so much. That's Gail.
Thank you,
Falkenthal. We will post where you can follow her and go from there.
So. Thank you, Gail.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What happened? What happened, Jim?
Oh. We all know tonight, you know, amateur MMA in Michigan, it's in its death throes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kicking its last breath, and we've had the first couple of fatalities.
Uh-oh.
We've had the first couple of fatalities. I hate to say this, but so the first fatality tonight, this just came across the net. It's fighting in two fights in the same night.
Can't do that no more.
Can't do that anymore. The world of amateur MMA in Michigan was shocked to learn today that fighting in two different matches in the same night has died. No longer will we be able to see a fighter get his head smashed in at a bar in Port Huron and then go down the road to a barn and do it again, suffering severe brain damage. The world of amateur MMA in the state of Michigan will forever be changed with this announcement. You can pay your respects at your local bar where the fighters who counted on this will be drowning their sorrows. It will not be missed.
That's sudden, but we
also have another death. Fights with one person having way too many fights over his opponent.
Okay.
That has also died tonight. The world of amateur MMA in Michigan was shocked once again today by the news that fighting against an opponent who has 20 fights versus someone who has two fights has died.
Ugh.
This is a huge blow to the fighters that counted on these easy wins to pad their career stats. No longer will we be able to see a 15-5 fighter fight a 2-0 fighter. This will take some time to adjust to, as fighters will have to start fighting people of their own skill level. Memorial services will be held within the first minute of the first round.
Jeez.
It will not be missed.
Ooh.
So, yeah, first fatalities are coming in, Brad.
I know. It's a big day in Michigan Unarmed Hand Combat history here. The guest I'm going to announce, who's already talked to Gail a few times, talked to Al Lowe. I saw him talking on social media about this should have been done a long time ago when they passed the professional. Amy should have never been here. But I want to introduce to you one of the guys that I think is – the official spokesperson of Detroit boxing now that Emanuel's passed. Everybody looks to Frank Garza for leadership in Detroit boxing. He's also a judge and a ref. So
we're all, I'm laughing because Sugar Hill keeps pointing at Anthony Barnes.
And I
like, here you go.
I thought I was right.
No. Let's welcome Frank Garza. Thank you, Frank, for coming. This is a
My
long
pleasure.
Time coming.
My pleasure.
I think over 3 years I've asked you a lot of times, and it's just never worked out, and we finally have you here, so this is absolutely great. So we know a lot about your accreditations, but tell the rest of the world which organizations you judge for, which organizations you ref for, and how you got started in it.
Well, I got started with the originally Lima Boxing Club at Salvation Army years and years ago. But I really got involved with the Southgate Boxing Club downriver. And my trainer was Nick Torres. And from there, I trained in amateur boxing. And then I assisted Nick in training boxers and taking them to club shows. And I had a boxer, and we fought the Kronk boxing team. And I really believe that my boxer won the fight, but the judges gave it to the Kronk fighter.
Look at Sugar getting mad.
Because, you know the Kronk name and all that. So
when was this again?
So I thought, you know what? I got to give this officiating a try. So on a dare, I got the rule book and I read the rule book, and I found out I didn't know that much about the rules as I thought I did. And I really drew an interest into officiating, and that's where it started. And once I got into officiating, I thought this is my niche. This is what I really want to do in boxing. And from there, it was really an opportune time at that time when I got involved, because as you remember, the WBC and the WBA, they stripped the title away from Larry Holmes and Marvin Hagler. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And the IBF formed. And at that time, the big organizations told the main set boxing officials that if you officiate for the IBF, you're no longer going to be able to officiate for us. So there was a call for a whole crew of new officials to come on. And it was just being at the right place at the right time. And also at that particular time, Kronk Boxing was just coming on board like a runaway locomotive. And we were doing the fight night at the Cobo Arena, and we had Johnny Ace, Ace Productions, doing a monthly show.
Oh, yeah.
At the Premier Center. And at that time, we were having what I would consider two world-class boxing shows every month, and also maybe one or two club shows. So coming up as an official, you were officiating world-class boxers every month. And then also on the amateur program at that particular time, we had the McCrory brothers. We had Floyd Mayweather Jr. coming in, James Toney. Mm-hmm. These are guys all I remember in the amateurs. So it was hands-on training with the world's best boxers, both in the amateurs and the pros. And then in the 90s, I got involved politically and was appointed to the Michigan Athletic Board of Control, which was a predecessor of the Unarmed right. Combat Commission and got involved in administrative law. And then I decided just to go with one organization, and I believe I chose the best organization. That's the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
It's the belt everyone wants, the green belt.
It's the green belt.
You ask Anthony right now.
Yeah.
You get pick one belt, which one?
WBC.
Exactly. It's right. The one that everyone recognizes and it's stuff like that. After that, I think it's even the ring pound for pound because of what Rocky did for it. I want to encourage everybody, if you have a question, go on our Twitter at UndercardRadio1. You can ask a question to Frank Garza, or you could ask a question to Sugar Hill. Sugar, you actually got a question that came in, if Jimmy can find it here really quick before. I know you got to jet out for a second, but come back. But
oh, it was if Kovalov
was going to... Read it verbatim if you have it.
It's on Facebook, but he just wanted to know what's the holdup of Kovalov.
It's actually from Scotty Buck.
Stevenson,
he wants to know.
Fighting.
Scotty Buck.
But I thought you kind of answered this last time you were on the show.
I don't know, but I'll talk to Scott. It's no problem. the hold up with Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalov fight is pretty much the networks. So I guess we have a similar situation like a Floyd Mayweather and a Manny Pacquiao. This fight with Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalov had its way in the making in. I think it was 2014, maybe. It was supposed to originally happen, and they didn't come to an agreement, and they were both with HBO, so this fight could have happened. Adonis Stevenson was already champion, and Sergey Kovalov had won his championship, and they wanted these two powerhouses to fight. And at that time, myself and I guess others. You know, I thought it was a little bit premature for those two guys to match up at that particular time. It was never a question of changing networks or anything like that. It was just a question the fighters wanted to get paid. You know, like we said earlier, it's a business now more so. So fighters are not just going to be fighting and not getting paid, you know, putting their life on the line. And at that point, Adonis Stevenson made a move over to the PBC network. And since then, we have this problem where there's no fight. But there has been some talks of getting closer. So, you know, it's building up the intensity. And at least I know with this fight, it being built up to a great fight, it will be a knockout. Somebody's getting knocked out.
Scotty says thank you.
Oh, that is so sweet. Tell Scotty I really appreciate him asking a question for me, and he can call me anytime.
It's probably the one question you're tired of hearing, though. Let's be honest.
No, not really. I mean, it's not really tired of hearing. I wish they would fight. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Never had a problem with it. I'm not the one that's getting in the ring, so the fighters want to get paid, and I think it's fair that they should get paid. Everybody else is getting paid.
Right.
So why not the fighters get paid as well, you know, equally for them being in the ring, you know, throwing the punches and getting hit.
You just got your phone ready, and when you get the call, you get the call. That's the life of the trainer, right?
I get the call, I get the call.
I talked to Adonis last week, and I asked him about the same thing. I said, you know, because you got in the ring, and, you know, he's all excited. He wanted to get the fight, you know, because Kovalev called him out. And he's wanted the fight, you know, and he's ready. So I guess it's all about the networks, like Hill was saying. But he definitely wants it. So when you read on the internet, everyone's like, oh, Adonis is scared, all this other stuff. Adonis wants to fight more than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know.
You know, the bottom line is everybody wants to fight.
Mm-hmm.
All the fight fans, that's all they're talking about. There's only two entities that don't want the fight.
HBO and Showtime.
HBO and Showtime.
Right. Even Kovalev wants to fight.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's the unfortunate part about the system being like that. But it's good for boxers because they get paid more, being able to negotiate against both networks.
If the buildup gets big enough and the fight's, you know, going to be like a super fight, you know, not just something that happens, you know, on ESPN. You know,
right. So yeah, thank you for asking that question. And then, what's the call-in number, Rochelle? If anyone wants to call in and ask the, I know we've been here like 8 months, and I don't know the call-in number. Oh, I guess she doesn't know it either.
It's on the wall right there.
Is it really?
And no. Everyone's looking. No. Come on, you've been here for 8 months. Yeah.
Well, no, you never know. Some people might have thrown it up.
For
see,
us.
Hold 248-579-5295. 5295.
And that was my
really, saves us.
And that was my important voice.
You should have known it, Kayla. You were going to call it.
You can call in and ask a question to either Frank Garza, Anthony Barnes, or Sugar Hill. And
or the other people here like you. Or,
yeah, no one has the question for me. Sugar's going to take
cares about
a little
us.
Bit. I'll be back a little later.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you.
I'll be back.
So we're going to go back to Frank Garza here really quick, and we learned how you began, and I got to meet you when I got into the sport, and we've had a few beers at the Irish Gaelic Club in Detroit, Michigan, and you got some great stories because you've been around a long time. My all-time favorite story is the Mike Tyson story. Tyson fought Galata in Palace of Auburn Hills, and at that time, Tyson was outside of the ring was a maniac. And the whole press week was a bad week. He wasn't answering questions on live feeds. People didn't think this fight was even going to happen. You get the draw. You're the ref. And some people say it's the most behaved Mike Tyson has ever been in a fight. How'd you do it? How'd you meet Tyson before? Tell us all about that fight.
You know, I did receive a lot of praise from a lot of people. And the question, like you said, what happened? And it started at the weigh-in, and like they always do, after they weigh the guys in, they want to do a photo op, and they make them face off with one another. And there was, I want to say, Gary Shaw and Dan Goosen, yeah, were up there on the stage. Well, they faced off with one another, and they said, okay, we're done. And they wouldn't step back. And then you started seeing the little twitches in the face, and you started seeing the sweat coming down. And then I saw Mike clenching his fist, and Galata got this really goofy look in his eye, you know. And I'm very proud of our state. I can't tell you how much. I'm very proud of our state and our people here. And if you remember, prior to that, Tyson threw a punch in Vegas,
mm-hmm,
and missed and hit somebody's standing, a viewer there standing, mm-hmm, and hurt that person. And I wasn't going to have our state be embarrassed. So thinking really rapidly, I had the program in my hand. And his birthday, June 23rd, I think, clicked in my brain at that time. But anyway, I stepped between both boxers and I said, hey, Mike, can I have your autograph? And both these guys just kind of like, what? And Mike said, yeah. So he signed my program. And Galata looked at me and he says, how come you didn't ask me? And I said, because I'm going in alphabetic order. I went with Mike first, now I'm going with you. And evidently that went over his head. And then he autographed my program. The reporter, I think he's from New York, Katz, wears the big donut around his neck.
Yeah.
Okay. He was standing there and he says, did I just see what I saw? He says, I'm going to get you thrown out of boxing.
Yeah.
For doing that. He said, for taking, you know, he couldn't fathom what I had just done. Because I wasn't going to have these boxers throwing punches in mm-hmm. front of our state and embarrass our commission or our governor or the sport of boxing. So that diffused the whole situation. But getting back to what you're going to get, what I think what you want me to get to, I saw that June 23rd. And now my birthday is June 28th. And at that moment, it clicked into me, I know how to get in his head. Because he's, you know. So I go into the dressing room fight night. And Mike's pacing up and down in the locker room, and they've got all this music and stuff going on, you know. And I says, hey, Mike, I said, I want to come in here and give you the pre-fight instructions, but you let me know when you're ready. Just send somebody for me. And Mike turned around. He says, well, you're here. Why don't you just give me the instructions now? I says, okay. So he sat down. I sat down with him. I says, hey, Mike, listen. I says, I know you know the rules. But you don't know me. I know you. Everybody knows Mike Tyson. I said, here's the biggest fight in you know your career because you're coming back. Glad is coming back. There's so much on the line. I says, I really think that you need to know something about me. So I'm going to tell you my life story. And Mike looked at me and he's like, this guy's nuts. So I said to Mike, I said, I was born June 28th. I'm a Cancer. And Mike goes, he just lit up like a young man and he says, I was born June 23rd. And I said, Mike, don't interrupt me when I'm talking. And then I knew I had his total attention.
Yeah. I don't care how bad you think you are.
You're not Frank Garza.
You're not Frank Garza badass. Right. You've never told Mike Tyson not to interrupt you while you're talking.
So I said, Mike, I'm talking. Don't interrupt me. So I said, Mike, you don't know what it's like to be a Cancer. And he's jumping up and down on the bench, you know, and he wants to say something, and I won't let him talk. I said, Mike, when you're a Cancer, you get blamed for everything. I says, I went to a German parochial school. I was the only Mexican-American in school. And let me tell you, when you go to a school where everybody's what we call a towhead, with the blonde hair and the white skin, and one of the girls in school gets pregnant, I says, you run to church and you fall down on your hands and knees and you say, don't let that little baby come out with brown eyes and black hair. So from that point, Mike and I had a really one-on-one conversation, just like what we're doing right here. We forgot about boxing and we started telling stories about what it was like to be a kid and all this stuff. And then I looked at my watch and I said, you know, I took enough of your time. I know you got to get ready for the fight. And we shook hands. And he said, you know, he says, nice talking to you. And I said, nice talking to you. And I said, I know you're going to give me a clean fight. I said, so I don't have anything to worry about.
Now, if I would have bet you wow. that night, if we would have known each other back then, because I was much younger, but I was at that fight. I was in I told the story all the time. I was in the upper bowl and someone from Showtime came up and gave free tickets to move down because the attendance wasn't. Ticket prices were high, so I moved down.
Were you the guy that threw the margarita?
No, I was not. I was not that guy. But if I would have bet you that night that you would have had problems with Galata over Tyson, what odds would you have gave me?
I would have gave you even odds.
Oh, okay.
I would have gave you even odds, really. During the whole week and seeing how everything was going, I would have gave you even odds.
So if people don't know, I believe it was he didn't come out. For the third round, is it correct? It went two rounds, or was it the third round?
I think it was a third. I'm really not sure.
Right. And all of a sudden, Galata refuses his corner, and all chaos starts to break off. He kind of nudges into you. You're telling him, go in your corner, fight, get going. And then he quits on his corner. His corner's yelling at him, don't do this, don't be an embarrassment. And all heck breaks loose. What's going through a ref's mind at that time?
Well, what happened when the bell rang? Mike Tyson went to his corner. I picked up the scorecards. And I was walking towards the commission table to hand in the scorecards. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw some movement. And I turned and I saw Galata coming out of his corner, walking towards Mike Tyson's corner. And if you remember, the round that had just ended was really a give-and-take round.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, he's lost it. Now he's going after Tyson in the corner. So I turned around and I stopped Galata. And I said, go back to your corner. And he says, I quit. And I says, you still got a minute. You know, the emotions between both these guys mm-hmm. were really high. And I'm not going to take a guy at his word at that moment.
Right.
You know, get in the corner, sit down.
Compose yourself.
And compose yourself, yeah. Exactly. Well, Al Cerda is livid. You know, I wish that they would take that conversation that went on in the corner, and they need to put that in like a Rocky movie or something. Because the conversation that was going on there is just classic. And when the bell rang, I went over to the corner. I said, "What are you going to do?" And he says, "I quit." And there's no overruling it. He quit. So I went over there, waved my hands, called the fight off, and raised Mike Tyson's hand.
Wow.
And the strong Polish following, which Galata had, went nuts. And what he's referring to, people started throwing stuff. It was one of those situations where you got to get out of there. So at that point, when because we see it happen a little bit, unfortunately, in boxing, at that point, what's the ref's job when the crowd now has become a factor? Is it getting the fighters safely out of the ring, or is it worrying about the other officials that are around? What is the job of the ref at that point?
Well, the unwritten rule is the ring is your ship, and you don't leave the ring until the other referee or the, you know, say that was the last bout.
Right.
Well, then you get out and you go to the dressing room. But if there was another bout, your job is to stay in the ring until the next referee gets in there.
Right.
But to tell you, everything that was going on, Greg Serb brought in some Navy SEALs to, and Greg had no Greg had no jurisdiction there. You know, he just came in because it was just a tremendously big fight at that time. He brought in four Navy SEALs to protect me at ringside happened.
Did he just have some Navy SEALs in his pocket and just like, come on, guys, or?
It was my
there to watch, and then he just like, hey, guys, come with me.
It was my understanding that there was a lot of threats being made.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what was really scary is when you walked into the ring before the you know, to get the fight going, and you see all these little red dots on you. And, you know, this is being told afterwards that people have been making calls and threatening calls.
Oh, laser pointers. Yeah.
So you don't know what's going on.
Wow.
If people have.
Yeah, laser scopes or just laser pointers?
Yeah.
That's such a great story.
That's crazy.
That's my favorite Frank story.
That is absolutely crazy. Awesome.
I know.
Beginning to end. What was it that you said that you wish they could have got the audio and put it in a Rocky movie? What was being said in the corner?
Well, you know that list that you gave me that have all the words that I can't say tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much all
really?
Pretty much everything on that list. But gotcha. I remember Al saying, don't do this to me. Don't do this to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's a great story. We're going to be back with Frank Garza here in a little bit. We're going to go to our first break of the night, and then when we come back, we are going to go What's on Tap at 8 o'clock, Muhammad Adam. And then talk more with Frank Garza. We greatly appreciate him being in here.
We got one more death notice that just came in. We're going to do it right before we go to break.
Oh, wow.
So this one just came in. Video weigh-ins. The world of amateur MMA in Michigan is in utter shock as we say goodbye once again. Video weigh-ins was pronounced dead today, although the deceased was shown through video, so we're not sure they didn't doctor the footage. No more will fighters be able to videotape their weigh-in and doctor the footage to make weight. Fighters will now have to weigh in person for a fight. Memorial service will be held at your local fast food joint where the fighters who counted on video weigh-ins will be drowning their sorrows in cheeseburgers. It will not be missed.
We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back with What's on Tap in the fight world. We got Ring Girls Liz and Kayla in here. We got Marv. We got Anthony Barnes. We're having a good old time talking boxing, and we'll be back in about 6 minutes.
This is a previously recorded episode of The Undercard, Hand Combat Radio.
Welcome back to The Undercard. We are enjoying some side conversations with Frank Garza and Anthony Barnes. We're talking boxing today. We're going to break down the Detroit Brawl in a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the Wild Wild West officially ending. But it is 8 o'clock, and it is time for Jimmy's segment.
Yes, it is. Once again, it is time for What's on Tap, sponsored by Falling Down Beer Company. All right. What's on Tap, February 9th. These are boxing events. February 9th in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, PBC on Fox Sports 1. And you got Jamel Herring versus Luis Eduardo Flores for 10 rounds for the lightweight. on February 10th at Bangkok, Thailand. We have Stamp Kaintawat versus
can't say it
versus Gregorio LeBron. It's a rematch, 12 rounds for Kant's WBA interim flyweight title. February 12th at Nakhon Ratchasima, Thailand. We got Punglong Sor Singhua versus Jetro Pabustan. 12 rounds for Sor's WBO bantamweight title. In Ontario, California, Danny Roman versus Romero Robles. 10 rounds for the junior featherweights. February 13th at Studio City, California, Unimas, we have Alex
Saucedo,
thank you, yeah. Versus Clarence Booth. I'm going to need you here like every time when I do these.
Frank Carson's on payroll.
Yep. 8 rounds for the welterweight. And in Biloxi, Mississippi, Mike Bessett versus Rodney Moore, 6 rounds for the cruiserweights. And February 16th in Las Vegas, PBC on Fox Sports, we have, Alex Santiago versus Eric Ruse, 10 rounds for the bantamweights.
Let's not forget, this Saturday, Carlos is throwing a show. Carlos, a friend of the undercard. The undercard ring card girls will be actually be in the ring card girls. And come out and check out our next interview that's coming up after we go through MMA really quick. Muhammad Adams fighting. Dwayne Williams is fighting. I'm trying to remember the rest of the card. My mind went blank.
But Brandon McLaughlin.
No. You're thinking TXC.
You're right.
Yeah. Ah, you're mixing the sports, too.
Yeah. Oh, God almighty.
Mixing the sports.
Never mind. I'm just thinking like...
All right, Jimmy.
All right. Moving on to MMA, February 9th, PBC on Fox Sports 1, Herring versus Flores. February 12th, Tech Crep FC Battle in Siberia, Sever Sports at Concert Complex, Nova Brisk, Russia. February 13th.
Wait, Young really Blood. Quickly, though. Yep. The ruble's fallen so much, you could probably get into that fight for the equivalent of a dollar American.
Probably. February 13th, Young Blood Night 6 in Bavaria, Germany.
It hurt my ears when you said that. It's Novosibirsk.
Sorry. My bad. At February 13th, ECC Extreme Cage Combat. In the County Halifax Forum in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. And that is this episode of What's on Tap.
We're going to call up on Muhammad Adam right now. Me and Barnes saw Muhammad Adams debut together, and I remember Barnes leaning over saying, if this guy sells the tickets like this and gets the crowds like this, he's going to be pretty successful.
Please leave your message for
that's
seven,
a good sign,
three,
always.
4, 7, 7, 8.
We'll call him back in a few minutes. We'll continue with Frank Garza. He could be calling us, though.
Muhammad Adam is a phenomenal fighter.
Yeah? The
Absolutely.
Hawk?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I grew up with him, like, in the gym. I was on the National Golden Gloves team with him. We're both managed by Cameron Duncan. Kid's phenomenal. And he sells out, like, crazy tickets.
Right.
Crazy.
Drums,
did
chants.
Did he make his pre-debut at the Athenaeum? They're in Greektown?
No, it was Masonic Temple, and then he did his second fight, which our ring girls, you remember when everyone got in the ring? That was at the International Banquet Hall in Greektown.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, and they even got in, they were even getting in the round during the fight.
Yeah, it was crazy. Let's try him one more. Let's try him one more time, and then if we're not, we'll try him back a little later and continue on with Frank Garza here.
Yeah, he's a really likable person. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of fighters, you're like, I don't want to talk to him. He's an asshole. Like, he's
please leave your message for
well, he doesn't want to talk to us.
Yeah, apparently not.
All right, I'll try to message him through Facebook.
Brad, we got another one.
Uh-oh.
We got another one. Another death. This one actually deserves a little bit of a song. Is it playing? No, wait, hold on here. Here we go. This death is fighting outside your weight class. The hits just keep on coming. It was announced today that fighting outside your weight class was killed off in a brutal attack by someone who was far bigger than it was. Witnesses say that the fight was brutal and that the little guy stood no chance against someone who was clearly 50 pounds heavier than he was. From eyewitness reports, it was a two-hit fight. The big guy hit him, he hit the floor, and was pronounced dead upon impact. While his death was tragic, it won't be missed.
All right, as we this is the last official day where you can actually throw some unsanctioned AMI MMA out in the world. Tomorrow it's a whole new day, and it's about time it come about. But we're joined by Frank Garza, who my next question goes into what we're talking about. He is a judge and a referee in boxing, and when I have questions about stuff that I don't understand, I've bounced over maybe two or three times to Frank Garza to explain the rules to me, and he does it amazingly. You've been a judge and ref. Which one's your favorite if you get the call? Would you rather be in the ring?
Referee.
Referee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Is there a reason? You just feel the excitement, or?
Oh, I'm the boss. I'm the chair.
Is there less pressure? Because, you know, with referee, you kind of got the rule book, and you know the rule book, and there is interpretation. But with scoring, is there more pressure with scoring a fight?
No, there's tremendous pressure being a referee.
Yep.
You know, especially in the big fights. To give you an example, when I did the Winky Wright and Jermaine Taylor fight in Arkansas, when I went in for the rule meeting, you usually go in there and the boxer and his trainer, maybe one or two other people are there in the commission. Well, I got in there and Winky's there and he's got three or four people with him, and Jermaine's got about five people with him. Both Lou DiBella's there and Gary Shaw's there. The commission's there and some other people are there with the commission. And this is the biggest crowd I've ever seen, you know, in a rule meeting. So I said, if you don't mind, before I get started, who are you? and I said, I know that you're Jermaine's father, Mr. Taylor. I said, I know. And he said, yeah. And I said, I know Jermaine. But I said, who are you? He says, I'm his attorney. I says, okay. And who are you? He says, I'm his attorney also. So then I go to the other corner and I said, who are you? He says, I'm the attorney. And I'm an attorney. And then I go to the commission. I says, this is the attorney general of the state.
Okay.
So litigation has become a big issue in all sports, and it is even transcended into boxing. Huh. So one of the corners asked me, he said, how many warnings do you give before you take a point away? And I said, as many as I deem necessary. He says, well, is it one? Is it two? Is it three? And I said, like I said, as many as I deem necessary. And he says, well, I want an answer. And I says, I'm sorry. I said, I've already given you the answer. I said, I've given it to you twice. And this is something that I learned when I was on the Michigan Commission when it comes into making administrative rules. Uh-huh. You have to be a little ambiguous in your rulemaking, because if you say you shall, or
right,
you know,
and you don't.
You don't. Now you've opened yourself up to a can of worms.
Yeah.
All right. Name a fight really quickly. Earlier, Gail asked you a question of some of your favorite fights. Name a fight over your career as a ref you wish you could do over. Is there one that when you stepped away that you're like, I might have not got that right, or I would have handled it differently?
I'm not being arrogant, but no, I really can't.
Okay.
The one thing that I do is once the fight is over, I'm one of these guys, and sometimes I'm a bad interview because people ask me about a fight this past fight. I really put a lot of it out of my mind. And I move into the next fight, and I mean this, you know, with Anthony staying here, sitting here. When I do a fighter's first four-round fight, mm-hmm. to me, that's the most important fight that I have in my boxing career at that time. Mm-hmm. Because I know that you trained yourself, that you prepared yourself just as the same way as if you're entering a world championship fight. And I know that that's the most important fight of your career at that time in your life. And if I didn't handle it the same way that I would handle a 12-round championship fight, then I'm doing a big disservice to you and I'm doing a big disservice to the sport.
And also, he did do my first pro debut. So.
And you had to know him. Everyone knows Frank Garza.
Yeah,
so you had to be happy with the ref selection.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I got a question for you, being a member of the WBC, but also being a boxing knowledge person. Let's just say, why don't we get bigger fights through Detroit or Michigan right now? It seems like we're kind of in a little area. Prime example, PBC hasn't chose us. There, it seems like the major cards aren't coming through. We do got a lot of promoters that are doing great, but the main fights, like a Tyson Galata, that hasn't come through in a long time. Maybe the Silver Dome with Don King and Bradley was the last one I can remember. Well, what's your thoughts on this?
There's all kinds of logistics that go into this, and let's talk about what went wrong with the Bradley fight at the Silver Dome. That fight was not really scheduled for here. That fight only came to Detroit, I think, maybe a week or less there, so there was really no preparation for it. What happened was the promoter the fight wasn't going to happen where it was going to happen, so they looked for a venue, tossed it around. The guys at the Silver Dome who owned it at that time, they jumped on it because they thought this was an opportunity for them. But there was no way that they could prepare for this. The other fight, the K-9 fight at the Masonic Temple, that's another particular fight that it was a big fight, but it came to Detroit at the last minute. The promoter had an argument with some people, I think it was in Las Vegas, and he got mad and they said, "Well, if you don't like what the commission's going to do, take your show elsewhere." And he said, "I will." And he took it and he brought it to Detroit. Venues is a problem in Detroit. Even though we have a lot of venues, we just don't. We need a really solid 5,000 seat venue here where people can have easy access to it. The parking, hotel rooms is another thing. We have a problem. We had a problem with hotel rooms. Now we're getting a lot of hotels. The other big problem is backing. And again, this is just my opinion. We have the casinos, but the casinos are doing really well without doing anything. You know, they don't really have any big name entertainment coming into Detroit. And they don't need boxing to bring people into the casino. Detroit people are just going to the casino, and I think they're doing like, what, $1 million each day, all of them?
Wow, really?
The number's really up there. So these are some of the logistics of why we haven't had a really big show in Detroit in a while.
It just seems odd because of Detroit's boxing history. It seems like some would come through. And you're right, the K-9 fight, I forgot about that one. That was a big fight. Floyd Mayweather was in town. But we did get it last minute. And it was at the Masonic Temple, which I believe that theater holds about 4,000 in the theater seating. But
it did really well, didn't it? If I'm not mistaken,
it did pretty good. It did pretty good.
Just not a lot of good parking, and you know, you have to worry about you're walking outside and your car, window smashed in, and everything else. So,
and I'm not a big fan of the theater seating.
Okay,
I don't know how you guys feel.
You know, I don't care.
As media, it really depends where they put you. Dimitri put us and Carlos puts us really well. But the Masonic that time was kind of odd. We were off to the side. It really depends on, you know, where you're going to put us, you know.
In the next 10
years. Why don't you like the theater seating?
I just like to be able to move around. And if you have a seat there in the middle, you know, you're pretty much stuck there and you can't. And I don't feel comfortable in those cushy seats, you know, sitting there with my beer and popcorn. And I'm only talking as a sports fan.
Right. Does it matter to you when you're officiating?
No, not as an officiating, but I'm speaking as a, sure, as a fight fan, because that's who you really want to cater to.
Right, and I mean that was the person, a good friend of our show, Rick Pratt. He was sitting next to me while we were sitting in our seats. The guy was working the camera. There were a couple of times where we couldn't see anything because he was standing in one spot. And he wasn't moving around because that's just the way that it was. And if it was more 360, it would have been a little bit easier, you know, for him to see the fights.
Well, let's run down the Detroit Brawl. We have Frank Garza who refs some of the fights. We have Anthony Barnes who is at the fights. I am going to do my best to pronounce some names. I'm actually proud of myself. I think I'm going to get this one correct here in a second. But the first fight of the night was Kane Herron versus Brian Ote. Really quickly, Frank Garza was the ref. I didn't see the last knockdown. It almost looked like a phantom punch. Was he even punched and went down, or did he not want to be in there?
I don't think he wanted to be in there.
He was just done.
He came in wearing gym shoes, if I'm not mistaken.
Not only that, basketball shorts with pockets, so he could have had a watch in those pockets.
That's right, yep.
Me and Frank off the air talked about this yesterday. What are your thoughts on maybe making them wear boxing shoes at least, or having shorts with no pockets in them.
Well, you know, I remember back in the day we had a couple trainers that or a couple guys that would bring fighters in. Jim Holly was one, and Richard Christmas was another one. And Richard Christmas passed away a couple years. I really liked the guy. He was really a great guy. And they would bring in opponents. And we used to joke about what kind of night we were going to have, because the first fight we'd see the bantamweights come in, and the guy would have a pair of boxing shoes that were size 12, and they were taped around the ankle and around the arch to keep on, and his, he had a pair of black boxing trunks that would go down below his knee. And then we would have a welterweight and a, or a middleweight come in, and the trunks and the shoes would fit okay. But then when the heavyweight came out, and you knew, you know, we would sit there and say, those trunks look a little familiar. And they'd be busting at the seams, and the boxing boots would just, you know, half his foot would be in, and he'd be stomping around there. But, you know, one thing, too, I don't know, Anthony, when I was back in the day at Southgate Boxing Club, you could go into almost any sporting goods store and buy boxing boots, hand wraps, and mouthpieces and things like that. I don't think that a lot of the boxers today have that luxury today.
Barnes wouldn't know because he shops at Saks Fifth Avenue for his fight gear. So
No.
Their special sporting goods section.
No, okay. So now I'm fortunate enough where I don't have to like actually go out and buy my stuff anymore.
He has people for that.
I do. yeah, now I mean, you can get wrestling shoes, pretty much the same thing, you know, mid tops, and it's really hard to find boxing shoes. But you can go on the internet and you can go to like Title or, you know, Ringside, and you can still get a pair of, you know, good boxing shoes for, you know, 20, 40 bucks. You find them on sale. I mean, there's no reason why these people can't have proper equipment. I mean, even if money is tight, you know, like if this is what you're doing, you're going to get paid, you know, at least get the promoter to buy it for you or something. You know, so yeah, I don't really know what the excuse is for that.
Now, what's the most important part of equipment for you?
Ooh, gloves. Gloves, for sure. Like,
protect those hands.
Yeah, well, I'd rather have, like, the smallest padded gloves as possible. Like, so I like to have, like, the Mexican-style Everlast or even Reyes gloves. I want something so, you know, you can feel the punch. You know, I don't like, Everlast makes I think it's called like ProLock or something like that, and it's very, I don't like the feel of the glove. It feels horrible, and it's really stiff, so I like something that's really loose, and you can feel the knuckles through it.
Well, great. Now we just lost our Everlast sponsorship.
Thanks, Paul. No, because the other glove that I love is made by Everlast.
And there you go.
That's
go.
The Mexican right. Way to save it. Actually, they're just
coming around.
They just called and said,
cool. And I fight in Everlast trunks, by the way. And they're actually making me my next pick.
And I referee in Everlast boots.
So they're back on. The next fight after that, I want to give mad props out to Kevin Shacks, who was clearly outmatched because he was going against Serdar Khudaybergdiev. See, I pronounced it right. That is absolutely amazing. He's
Hallelujah.
A 2012 Olympian from the Fight Factory and had a lot more experience than Kevin Shacks. But Kevin Shacks, you'll admit, Anthony and stuff, he came to fight, and there was a point where Serdar had a point taken away in the second round, and he got knocked down a few times. There was a fourth round ref stoppage, but here's a guy, total opposite situation from the Brian Ote, in which he came to fight and actually gave Serdar a difficult pro debut.
Serdar was using his elbow that fight. Was that? I think that's what they took the point away from.
Yeah. And do you remember the fight?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I was actually really excited to see him because I've heard about him and stuff. And, I mean, it's not very often you get to see an Olympian's pro debut on a local card. So
right.
I thank Dimitri for bringing that to Detroit. That's pretty cool. I appreciate it probably more than a lot of other people do. Because to become an Olympian, it takes a lot of luck, effort, skill, everything. So that was pretty cool. But, yeah, Kevin really did give him a hard fight and everything. And, I mean, the point was taken away, I think, for you, like you said, using elbows. And I think that's just part of the amateurs. Like, you learn a lot of stuff in amateurs that you probably shouldn't, but it comes with experience. So.
You know, I'd like to add something what Anthony was talking about, and that's the undercard. And I really like to get a word out to the fight fans that sometimes, or for me, that's really the part of the fights that I really want to see is the undercards. And one that especially comes to mind was a card that I did in Kobo. And I was introduced to a guy that was making, I believe it was his pro debut. And he was introduced to me, and the guy says he's going to be the next heavyweight champion, the next white heavyweight champion in the world. And that was Morrison.
Oh, wow, Tommy.
Tommy Morrison.
Tommy Gunn, yeah.
And the other guy that was on the – I think that opened the card was either his pro debut or his second fight was James Toney.
Oh, lights out. Yeah.
Yeah, so I always tell people when you get to a fight, get the bout sheet, find out who's on there, and you'll be surprised maybe 2 or 3 years down the road you can say, you know what? I remember seeing Anthony Barnes – fight, and now he's fighting for the world title.
Yeah.
Right. It's really hard sometimes to come across them, too. You have to, like, beg someone to get a fight card when you walk in there.
Mm. Sometimes,
They're not available for the crowds, usually, unless there's a program.
Yep, exactly.
We do have a question coming through Twitter, and if I mispronounce your name, I greatly apologize. Seraphine Tinsky would like to know, Frank, do you feel like the new Detroit Events Center will be a boon to boxing in Detroit?
That all depends on Olympia Entertainment.
Okay.
That's going to be in their ballpark. And just to say something, that a conversation that I was having with some people today, what was the biggest fight in Detroit that our generation that we can probably remember? And that's the Tommy Hearns-Pepino Cuevas fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say what a great thing to do to bring Pepino Cuevas in and Tommy together at this new event center, mm-hmm. and have a big, big fight card. I would just pay admission just to see Pepino and Tommy together in the ring and shake hands, you know?
Right.
But it's going to be there. It's going to be a multi-purpose facility. So, and Olympia Entertainment has a long history with the sport of boxing in mm-hmm. Detroit. And I do know that Mr. Ilitch loves boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Wilson is there in the upper echelons. He came from the Palace. He had a great boxing program there. And I think it's there. And like I said, we need a venue that can seat small crowds as well as large crowd. And like I said, it's going to be a multi-purpose facility. I think everything's there on the table, and I'm hoping that it does come through.
You know, to your point too, Frank, a lot of people that are I think, even a part of our show, I come from a boxing fan background. But if you've not seen boxing live and only on TV, you only got half the story. And it's when you see it live, almost the love comes about. And I think it's important to have as many fights as we can in the Detroit area, especially for the amateur program.
You know, when I first got involved in boxing, there was 21 boxing clubs in the Detroit area. The city of Detroit ran their amateur boxing program through all the recreation centers. Every city in the Downriver area had a boxing program in their rec center. And I would venture to say that we probably only have, what, about a half a dozen boxing gyms around here now?
I'm not sure. I know a few more has opened. It's definitely getting more popular again.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't know if that's from, you know, watching fights on TV now and people are just getting into it. But I know, like, last year's Golden Gloves, that was bigger than it was in the past, what, 10 years?
Yeah, right, Brad? We brought it back to the city of Detroit, which was important to us, yep. even though it is the Metro Detroit. And we got a new board, and we're pretty excited. There are some people on the board members that were pulling their weight, and but we got some new life in there, and we're very happy, you know, with what's going on. This year, it's going to be at the Kronk, which is
yes,
absolutely awesome.
Yes, it is.
So,
yeah. So it'll still be in the city, and it'll be at a most famous gym in the world.
Well, you know what's funny about that, and I was telling Rochelle about this. So we announced really quickly that it's going to be at the Kronk, and there was already some people that were thanking me through back channel saying, you know what, I always wanted to see the Kronk, even though it's not the one on Warren, even it's not the one on McGraw. But I would just never walk into a boxing gym. So they're actually pretty excited that it is at the Kronk, so they mm-hmm. can actually say that they've been in the Kronk.
You know, I want to put a word out to the people. Everybody's welcome at the Kronk.
Yeah.
Everybody. And it's always been that way. It's always had an open door policy. Even when it was over there on Junction and McGraw, it was a recreation center. You just walked in, signed a book, said you want to go down to the boxing gym. And I can tell you I spent countless hours down there watching sparring sessions, sitting there on the bench with Walter Smith and Floyd Logan and chewing the fat with everybody there and Emmanuel and – I really miss those days. I really miss the old Kronk, but I'm also full support of the new Kronk and what Milton is doing there. And Jimmy Paul has his own gym. Just like Anthony said, yeah, it does seem like there is a resurgence, and I'm glad to see that too.
We're going to move on. We're going to skip the James Ballard fight and the Nathan Bedwell fight because we do have an interview with Nathan Bedwell that I recorded right after the fight that I think is a good interview, so we want to replay it. But then we go to Eudy Bernardo, who was a guy from the Dominican Republic fighting his first fight in a year. 20 wins, 0 losses, 14 KOs against Ben Odemeti, maybe? I wrote it down in the Odemeti. But anyways, I personally, every once in a while, you'll come across a guy that might be the real deal. Barnes, Frank, I think Eudy might be the real deal. There was a lot of power, a lot of thumping going on. He wins by second round at the 118 mark knockout. I think he might be the real deal.
I want to tell you what I saw on him that night. And it started in the dressing room. He was very focused and he was very composed and relaxed. He was very relaxed when he came into the ring. And once that bell rang, you could tell that he was well-schooled. I don't know who trained him, but he was very composed, handled himself very well in the ring, showed tremendous hand speed. I was really impressed with his hand speed and his accuracy. And he didn't seem to tire. You know, the guy went into a crab defensive mode, and Bernardo threw a lot of punches, and it just seemed as though he was getting stronger. Kind of reminded me of the Deontay Wilder. You think that they're going to get tired, but the more punches they throw, it seems as though the stronger they get.
Yeah, and he eventually had to take a knee, and then later he took a knee, and you counted him out on a 10 count. But I think this is a name that we're going to see. Not everybody you see is that case, but I think we're going to see a lot from Eudy. And then Ed Williams versus Angel Figueroa. The thing about this fight, it was a hard-fought first round, but then as typical when Michigan goes against Ohio, a brawl breaks out. And all of a sudden, in the second round, just trading, Tommy Hearns was right behind me. I rarely hear Tommy Hearns yelling stuff at fighters. He was well involved in the fight, getting into it. And Ed Williams wins by unanimous decision. The scorecards were 60-54, 59-55, 60-54. Which was basically the fight of the night. And then luckily we have Frank Garza here because we've already talked about this, but James Gordon Smith goes against Antoine Robertson. And I was sitting next to a lot of New York media, and what had happened is Antoine Robertson goes down to a knee. James Gordon Smith hits him, and you counted him out on a 10 count. You perfectly explained it to me. The New York media sitting to the side and saying, that's not fair, that's a foul, this is that. You explained to me exactly what happened, and I think this is great. So what happened when Antoine Robertson goes down to one knee and gets hit again by James Gordon Smith?
Well, Robertson, he took a punch and he took a knee. It wasn't that he went down. He went down on his knee. And in the process of taking his knee, the other boxer, is it Smith?
Yep, Smith.
Yeah, Smith is in the process of throwing a punch and hits him again as he's down. Now, that is a foul, okay, hitting a boxer when he's down. But it's not a disqualification. You know, there's no rule in the rule book that says anything is an instant disqualification. Now, at this time, now you run into the mechanics of being a referee. And in your head, this page pops into your head and it says, if this happens, you yes, no, and you start following the yes arrows as things progress. And I took Smith, sent him to another corner, turned around to Robertson, and I had seen Robertson roll over on his back. So my concern is his safety. That's the number one concern. So now I need to determine where he is in this fight. So he's laying there and he has his arms out and his eyes closed. But nothing has indicated to me that he's hurt to a point where I need to call the doctor in. So I do an old trick, an old referee trick. I yell out the number 4 as loud as I can. And as soon as I yell out 4, his eyes open and he looks at me and he goes, what the blah, blah are you doing? The guy hit me when I'm down. So at that moment, I already know he's well aware of where he's at, and he's got his facilities under control and all this stuff. Now, I can't tell him to get up because that would be coaching. Now I'm a corner man, so I can't tell him to get up. So now that I know that there's no need to call the doctor, I start counting him out.
I heard you start at 4.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the heck? Did I, like, did my hearing go?
No, he looks the side official, gets the count where now, they're at.
Yeah, because when he goes down.
That's when you should start 1, but because well, it's been a minute.
Actually, it's down 1.
Okay.
When he's down, that's where it starts, and then it's 1, 2. But you have this automatic clock running in your head.
Yeah.
So you know where you are in the count. So I've got the guy going over to the neutral corner. So I turn and I go 4. And that's when he opens his eyes and he looks at me and he says, what are you doing? The guy hit me when I'm down. So I said, okay, well, you just told me that you're okay now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I continue the count, 5, 6, 7, 8. And he still doesn't get up. Now, if he had gotten up any time during the count, then there would be other actions that I would have had to have taken. But at this particular time, this is the progress that it goes. Then I go 9, 10. I just counted you out. Now, when I reached 10, he had jumped up. Now, so that's – oh, that might be him calling.
He's up now. He made the 9 count.
So anyway, so once I reached the count of 10, the fight's over. Mm-hmm. Now, if he had gotten up prior to that, the course of action would have been to penalize the other boxer. And since he had gotten up and all that, you know – it would have either been a 1 or 2 point deduction.
Right.
Okay. But since he didn't get up, in my opinion, he chose not to get up.
Exactly.
Because he was communicating to me all the time that I was counting. Hmm. So then I counted him out. And once he was counted out, then the fight's over. So there is no taking a point away from the other boxer. I hope that explained that.
No, and you said over the phone that there is no such thing as automatic disqualification.
Yeah, you know, and there's a big misconception that you hear all the announcers say, the guy got into the corner during the fight, that's an automatic disqualification. You'll hear Max Kellerman say that all the time. It isn't. It's a foul, and you just tell the corner, you got to get out of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an automatic disqualification.
And when you explained it like that, I clearly understood why you did it. There was also the Tyner fight. Who'd Tyner fight at the Masonic where they both went down or at the 10 count? You explained it to me perfectly.
Wasn't that Angel Hernandez or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, but getting to the rule that is the number one rule that everyone gets wrong is at the end of the fight, do you have to beat the bell for a 10 count? You explained it to me about a year and a half ago about that. Explain beating the bell in the 10 count. At the end of the round.
Now, this is something that, you know that I officiate all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
And this is one of the rules that especially when you go into another state or you're working for another organization, that's one of the major rules that you need to get a handle on because each city, state, country, that particular rule is different. Now, under the unified rules, it is the same. But there is no saving by the bell. And what that means is – let's say it's the third round and Boxer A hits Boxer B. Boxer B goes down at 2 minutes and 57 seconds. Well, you start your count. Well, the timekeeper is not supposed to ring the bell because there's no saving by the bell. So when you reach – say you reach 8 and he's up, you say box. And once you say box, then the timekeeper is supposed to ring the bell. Now – the timekeeper that particular night asked me too. He says, I got a question. He says, one of the boxers went down at 2 minutes and 50 seconds or 48 seconds. He said, should I have given the 10-second warning while the referee is doing the count? And I said, no. You wait, and then he's got 2 seconds to box. And when he says box, 1, 2, bing, you ring the bell.
That's a number one rule that I hear that people get confused at. Thank you, Frank Garza, for that. Then we move on to James Lester, hometown hero there, in the fact that he was on his last fight. A lot of people were rooting for him. He goes against Damash, and I'm going to get his name wrong for sure.
The Lightning.
Nayazov. He's fighting out of Brooklyn, New York, from Kazakhstan. And so James Lester loses 58-55, 58-55, 59-54. One of the New York announcers got Tommy to comment on it, and Tommy said that James Lester just didn't work enough. The main event was canceled. Junior Wright came in at 200 pounds, and Chris Stallworth came in at 183. This is just my personal opinion and nothing against Chris Stallworth, but I don't think the guy wanted to fight. A couple things I observed. One, you know you're not going to be near 200 and you didn't call the promoter and you're coming from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Right. You should have maybe gave the promoter an opportunity to find another fighter for Junior Wright or tell him that we need to renegotiate. They get on the scale at the weigh-ins, which I was present at, and they act like it's no big deal, not knowing the rule, as Frank Garza will tell you. In Michigan, there's a unique 7-pound rule that's not necessarily all over the place. They gave Chris Stallworth that he had to come up 10 pounds. The day of the weigh-in, they were going to Scott, the official, who does most of the weigh-ins for the state of Michigan, does a great job, said, hey, you know what, I'll weigh in before the fight. He comes in at 187, and clearly, once again, I don't think you want to fight because you can put 5 pounds of water on. Junior Wright wasn't going to go down because the contract was at 200 pounds. It's not his object to go down. And unfortunately, we did not get the main event. But if Dimitri Salida stays around, we will see lots of Junior Wright. And yeah. So that's not a big deal.
Yeah, sure. It's really fun to watch. Super fun. I was in Adonis Stevenson's training camp in Mississauga, Canada, and I was roommates with him. I mean, him got to box a lot, and super exciting, really aggressive fighter, big puncher. I was really, really looking forward to seeing him fight, too. He actually his only loss is on an IBO world title fight.
Exactly.
Yep.
And out of the country, too, yes. I believe. So, yep. I mean, that's always a different adjustment, and you got to factor in all that stuff. We do have audio. I want to talk a little bit about Nathan Bedwell. Here's a guy that's 5-15 and 4 KOs, and from an outsider's perspective, you're like, okay, well, this is a mismatch. How can they approve this fight versus James Ballard? But here's a kid who actually made his pro debut versus Sergey Kovalev. Not only did he make his debut against Sergey Kovalev, Kovalev at the time was 7-0, and his fighters that had come into the ring against him had a combined 135 wins on his 15 losses. He gives us a great interview, so we're going to go through all the audio that I have from the Detroit Brawl, and you'll hear Nathan Bedwell's interview somewhere in this audio.
Oh, jeez.
All
right.
Yeah.
Just do it.
People were telling me, they're like, oh, but the guy Ballard's fighting doesn't look like anything. You know, I was like, hey, he's fought a lot of
this is Mr. Throwdown, and you're listening to the undercard.
There you go.
All right, no.
Who's Mr. Throwdown?
That was the announcer that night. Keep
going.
Oh,
okay.
This is Mr. Throwdown, and you're
listening to No. Go to the next audio.
I'm learning how this works. Hold on.
Okay. Nope, go to the next one.
You know, a lot of shows edit their audio before they play it.
We wouldn't even get the opportunity to do that, Marv.
I'm just throwing it out.
Well, you know, Marv, if you have a problem,
nope, that's
you
not it either.
Actually come to the
Here,
event.
Let me see if I could.
Coming to the event has nothing to do with editing it.
No, it was behind the scenes. Just
but then
play.
You could do it, you could have it, you could edit it.
Just send me the files and I'll edit it.
All right, play the next.
We like to wing it around here, you know? So.
That's what we do.
Nope. 8 inches tall. Can tell you because it was in the dressing room. So anytime we hear the announcer, that is not the audio.
You know, and I got to commend you, Brad, for what you did because knowing a lot of the state commissions,
hi, this is Brad.
They will only look at the win loss record when they determine whether a guy can be in the bout or not.
Nathan,
start this from the beginning. This is the Nathan Bedwell interview. All right, here we go. And listen to how composed Nathan Bedwell is.
Hi, this is Brad with the undercard. I am joined by Nathan Bedwell, who came up to Michigan to fight James Ballard. Nathan, 5-15, people don't think that's a great record, but if you look at the people you fought, when they gotten in the ring with you, they've had 135 wins. You made your pro debut against Sergey Kovalev. Where does James Ballard rank in all these people that you fought?
I'd say he ranks... I don't know. He's nothing that I've been in there with the best, so... He's not in the top 10. He's not in the top 10 at all. He wouldn't be no better than – I'm not putting him down. He's a strong fighter, but he couldn't beat my last opponent, Cody Williams. He couldn't. And I weathered his storm, caught him in a right hook, and they stopped the fight. So I'm a little bit upset about the decision there. So
you went into a little bit of a shell and got against the ropes. Was it to try to tire James Ballard out? He threw 40-something punches.
Yes, he was tired in the end of the second. And it come to where I pushed him against the ropes and he was hitting me and I was weathering it. Then he turned me and I was on the ropes and I was going to time him. But I was going to time him with a perfect shot and I waited too long. I did wait a long time, but the ref should have gave me an 8 count at least. He could have checked me. He didn't even check me. He didn't even check me.
It's so sad. A lot of people would want to know this. I mean, you dropped to 5-16. What draws you to boxing still? Obviously, it's not going for a winning record. You're in the challenger role now. What keeps you back to the sport? Has it given something to you, or is it just a love?
It's not money. It's a addiction of being an underdog. I love it.
You like going into somebody's town and just taking the party away?
Yeah, usually my record's 5-6, and I should be about 10-11. That should be my record, 10-11. If you count tonight's loss, I think tonight was undecided. I believe that, you know. I thought I won the second. I thought he won the first. We was going at it a little bit in the third. It was close, and then he did. He would have won the third round, but I was aiming for a knockout. I'm not going to get a decision here in Michigan. I know that. I've been around it too long. And I love boxing. I've been doing it ever since I could walk.
And when you fought...
I don't have a manager or anything. I'm just in it. I'm road dog. I'm underdog. I'm coming for it.
Now, when you fought Sergey Kovalev for your pro debut, would you ever have thought he would be... I mean, he's my number one pound-for-pound fighter.
I did. I knew. And when I was going in that fight, I wasn't supposed to fight Sergey. I was supposed to fight a guy 0-1, and they said, hey, we got this guy. He's built up. He's nothing. I've been training for 5 months looking for a pro debut, so I was like, I'll fight him, I'll take him. And I got in there, and right away I knew it was a disaster. He is a real champion. I knew he was going to be champion.
So the hardest hitter you've ever went against?
Most definitely, yeah. Most definitely. And I met him 3 fights back in Oxnard, California, so he's a really good guy, too. So.
And then Kovalev and then Triple G are the ones that... I mean, you've not been in the ring with Triple G, but you think Kovalev's probably a harder hitter than even Triple G Golovkin?
I believe so. With the weight advantage, I believe he is. More national, I think he would be.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Nathan. You know, it's an awesome role. You come to fight, yeah. Spoil the party. Yeah, maybe we'll have you on the show some other time. Right. It wasn't your night. James Ballard got the best, but, you know, it was great having you on the undercard.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, that's an interesting role. I got a question I want to ask Frank Garza about what he said, because this is the big conception, is that you can't get a fair shake from judges going into someone's hometown. That's a great question that I want to ask Frank Garza. But first off, let's not take anything away from James Ballard. Nathan Bedwell hadn't thrown a punch in 40 punches. It looked like he was in a shell and not fighting back, whether he was trying to tire out. He later admitted, I believe off the air, unless we just heard it, he said he should have threw a punch to let the ref know that he was okay. He wasn't responding. That is a great win for James Ballard, because Nathan Bedwell has been in with the best. It's a step up that we typically don't see for a fighter in their first 10 fights, and congratulations to James Ballard. That doesn't look like much on paper. If you don't know boxing, go research boxing and you realize that is a great step up win. Congratulations, James Ballard, friend of the show. You heard Nathan. That's the big misconception. You can't get a fair shake from judges in a hometown. I'll put it to rest.
When I sat on the Michigan Athletic Board of Control, I was very proud of our officials at that time. And I took an active hand in training both the judges and the referees, along with Dale Grable was on the board with me. And I thought at that particular time we had some of the best boxing officials around. And we, from the state of Michigan, we produced a lot of judges and referees that made it to the world title circuit. And at that particular time, Sam Williams, myself, Dale Grable, we'd gotten Ron Cunningham up there for a while. And a number of judges, but no. I always say, you know, if you win the fight, you're gonna get the decision. But right. You got to win the fight,
exactly.
Not just show up.
And it's one of those things where that's the thing every fighter says to me. Hey, you gotta win by knockout because you ain't gonna win a decision. And we have a judge here saying that's not the case.
No. Our judges are trained,
right?
You know, and
how about other states? Is there any truth to this anywhere?
I think there is. I think there's a little bit of that.
Okay.
Or I won't say it's blatant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing too that people don't realize, it takes a tremendous amount of concentration to sit at ringside and judge fights.
Yep.
Especially even the small fight cards or what you call a club show, because you're sitting there the whole evening. Sometimes you get there, you know, like the show's maybe supposed to start at 7 o'clock. I got to put this in there. But maybe the show's supposed to start at 7 o'clock.
They never start on time.
And it doesn't get going until about 8:30. And the state requires that you're there an hour ahead of time. So you've been sitting there for 2.5 hours ahead of time waiting for the thing to start, and you're tired. And, you can lose your concentration. And then you know, the other thing that really happens, really very hard to do, a fight card, is when you guys bring in the undercard girls, you know?
Thank you. We greatly appreciate that. We have a question. This question's hilarious.
I'm going to have Brad read this one.
This is from Ned Stark. He's new to the undercard, but his question for Barnes.
Ned Stark?
Ned Stark at, what is it?
At Northern Keeper.
Northern Keeper.
Will he ever donate some of his luscious locks to Jimmy for a toupee? That is a legit question.
Yeah, I guess I will.
Frank.
So that's obviously a Game of Thrones fan.
It has to be, yeah. Northern Keeper Ned Stark. That's his Twitter handle. Yeah.
So you will donate money, or you will donate
your hair so I can get a toupee?
Yeah, I just need to get more hair.
Okay.
So. Well, you cut it like what, every 2 weeks? Or
yeah. So we'll get you like little bits at a time.
Frank, I want to thank you for joining us on the undercard. It has been great. Stay in the seat, though. We like to have some fun on the undercard too. Jimmy,
dang it!
What happened?
You got another one.
Okay.
Actually, you got two more. So, talking about amateur MMA, the end, we got two more death notices. This one is a lack of trained medical personnel. As if the world of amateur MMA in the state of Michigan has not suffered enough already today, it was just announced that not having proper medical personnel at an MMA event has just died. No longer will we see the promoter's cousin who took a CPR class 10 years ago as a medical advisor to a fight. An ironic twist of fate, not having proper medical personnel at an MMA event would have survived his injuries if there had been proper medical personnel in the house during his fight. The other one is untrained referees and judges. As if the day could not get any gloomier, it was just announced that untrained refs and judges has been pronounced dead at the scene of the crime. Although two of the three eyewitnesses say that he was not killed, but the third said that he was, and the guy closest to them didn't stop it in time. From now on, we will see less of Billy Bob, who watched a UFC fight once, be the official ref of a fight. We will also no longer see judges who are more suited to judging a wet T-shirt contest than an MMA fight being the judges. Memorial services will be held when the three witnesses can agree with what they really saw. It will not be missed.
Frank, like I said, we like to have some fun on our show, and Jimmy, we like to tease Jimmy about being single and everything like that, but Jimmy took his first date to the Detroit Brawl. He had a couple tickets to the Detroit Brawl.
That wasn't my first date.
Well, your first date with this lady.
First date with her.
Date with her, yes.
And I thought, let's have some...
That was her?
Yeah.
Oh, she's really nice.
Yeah. So I thought we'd have some fun because we have an official judge in Frank Garza, and then we have two ring card girls over here. We have ring card girl Kayla, who's super tall. How tall are you, Kayla?
Like 5'8".
And then with heels, you're like taller than every fighter I've ever seen.
That was one thing that Becky, who was my date, she's like, that is a really tall girl. I'm like, yeah, I've never seen her before.
That is a really tall ring girl.
That is a really tall ring girl.
That was her second event with us already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had our ring card girl Liz there also. So we have three judges. We're going to let Jimmy, just like a boxing match, we are on a time limit because we got to be off the air by 8:54.
Yep.
We want to hear where the dinner was. Okay. How it went, was there a good night kiss, and then we're going to go to the judges, Frank Garza.
Okay.
We're going to go Liz and Kayla and see, did you score a knockout
decision? I
want to
know about the end. I want to know about the beginning to the end, so like the entire thing.
All right, you're on time.
Entire
ding,
time
ding, 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 ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Okay, so we agreed to – well, first of all, the reason I invited her to the fight was because when we were talking online, I found out that she took Krav Maga. And I said, oh, this might be somebody who would be interested in seeing a boxing event. So when we were scheduling the date, I said, hey, I have these tickets to an event. It's a boxing event. Would you be interested? She said, yes, absolutely. I've never been to one. I would love to go. I said, great. So we met at Hopcat, which is a bar in downtown or midtown Detroit. We met there, and we had dinner and drinks. Conversation went very well. Lots of good back and forth. We were still some of those first date questions, you know, your favorite book, favorite author, things of that nature.
Shaking his head, he's like,
you're to the middle rounds. Get to the middle rounds now.
Okay, so then we left there. We drove over to the Masonic. We stayed at, we watched the event. It was a constant, she'd get some, we were drinking, because of the Masonic. So she'd get some drinks, I'd get some drinks. We were back and forth. And then as we were leaving, they announced there was going to be a after party. And so I said, do you want to go to the after party? She said, no, I kind of want to go somewhere, more quiet.
Let you in on a secret. No one goes to the after party. Burns, have you been to one? No.
No. So we decided to go to Honest John's, which was right down the street. We went there. We had a little bit more something to eat. And then we – little peck as a goodbye kiss, and then we went our separate ways. On the mouth.
Okay,
the
but
mouth.
First off,
but hold on.
We
hold
have
on.
To give Stepping Frank up. Doesn't have any of your background with your dating history.
Well, we may not have enough time, and as a judge, he doesn't need to know that. He doesn't
right.
know.
Wait,
what
hold
happened.
On. But okay. here's the thing. During the conversations, she had said one of the guys that she had gone on a date with previously, that he had asked for, like, it was a terrible date, but he had asked for a kiss at the end, and she said no. So I didn't want to push it too much, even though the date was going well. So instead of a nice sweet kiss on the lips, and that was the end of the date.
Well, the first thing I got to say is it, you struck out right away.
Okay.
Judge Frank Garza.
Okay.
Well, I was right in the beginning.
I'm going to have to take you under my wing, give you a couple pointers.
Okay.
First of all, you don't take a girl to a Hopcat,
No, that was where she wanted to go.
Well, no, you just tell her no. I ain't going there.
Okay.
Yeah, you're also the guy who told Mike Tyson not to interrupt you. I mean, you have a certain level bossitude.
Right. And you're not going to meet there. You're going to pick her up.
No, I offered to pick her up, and she wanted me because we were meeting for the first time.
Well, see, now you don't have a captive audience.
I know. I know. But I think for the second date, I will insist that I pick her up.
So but you want to take her someplace?
This Saturday.
You want to take her someplace that has history,
I didn't know that.
You want to take her by Cobo Arena, and you want to say, here's where Nancy Kerrigan got kneecapped by Tonya Harding,
We're going downtown to Campus Martius for the Winter Blast this Saturday, so maybe we'll do that at the same time.
And then the other thing, this getting going and back and forth for drinks and stuff like that. Yeah. Where was your flask?
So Frank, what did you judge it? Is it a knockout decision or?
It
sounds like it's ref stoppage.
RSC, referee stops contact.
Okay.
How about Kayla? How do you do?
1 minute.
Hop on the air and talk.
Yeah,
how do
no
you do?
Idea. I have no idea.
I think it's been a minute, so I'm happy for you.
All right,
I've seen
thank
her
you.
And I was like, she's trash.
Yeah,
so
she. It was
I'm
funny
happy.
Too because it was funny too because Liz came over for a little bit.
I was like,
and I was looking
nice
over,
day.
And then she looks at me. She gives me the wink and the thumbs up. She's like, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, do you see Jimmy's date? She's so pretty.
All right, we got to thank a lot of people. Yeah. We didn't get Mohammed Adam.
We do want to do. I know we only have like a couple seconds, but we got to do this. So we've been making a lot of jokes about the amateur MMA and the unregulated amateur MMA. Yeehaw, we're dressed up, Wild West. But on a more serious note, the reason we needed this so desperately in the state of Michigan is because of people like Felix Pablo I can't pronounce his last name. In 2000 and I believe it was 2013, he was a mixed martial artist fighting in Port Huron, Michigan, and he ended up losing his life because of the unregulated things that occurred in amateur MMA in Michigan. So, yes, we made a lot of fun of it tonight, but it was desperately needed for the safety of the fighters in the state of Michigan. So we are so happy that the Wild, Wild West is finally gone.
Exactly. Death to something that should have been done a long time ago. Let's thank our guest, Frank Garza. You're always welcome. Your
yes,
stories
absolutely.
Are great.
Thank you for having
you're
me
awesome.
On. Thank you for
yes.
having me on.
Thank you for being on with us.
I want to thank Anthony Barnes, Jimmy, Marv for being my co-host, Rochelle for working the board, Ring Girls Kayla and Liz for dressing up in like cowgirl attire just for the Wild West or whatever. Just being you, okay? How about that? Gail Falkenthal for joining us. She knows her stuff. Sugar Hill for being in here. This was a great show. Hopefully, if you're listening to us on podcast, check out more shows on podcastdetroit.com. We will see you next week, and I will get that Mohammed Adam interview this Saturday in Royal Oak, and then we'll air it next week. Take care. Party, we will party hard.
This is a previously recorded episode of The Undercard, Hand Combat Radio.